All right, so good to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Dr. Ron Paul from Campaign for Liberty. Just last week, a guest on this show suggested that we need to resurrect President Andrew Jackson, the great bank fighter who announced 160 years ago that government will no longer use the Second Bank of the United States, i.e. a beta version of our current Fed. We both agreed that my next guest embodies much of his spirit. For decades, Dr. Ron Paul fought the powers that be who shackle our monetary system, and he's a voice for restoring our innate personal freedoms. Welcome, Dr. Paul.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be with you.
Well, it's an honor to have you back, sir. And you know, it's interesting, this trend around the globe, gold repatriation. You penned an interesting article on this. Hugo Chavez, you might recall, the late Venezuelan president. Mexico followed suit. Germany, your state of Texas, requested the return of its gold. And now you say Switzerland, the Swiss people, need to demand the return of their gold. Tell us more, please.
Well, they're having a referendum at the end of this month. And it's interesting, of course, the government, the internationalist United States, they don't like to see this happening. But the referendum is to let the people in Switzerland vote on the repatriation of their gold, bring all the gold that is held outside the country back into the country, have a 20% backing of the currency, and obviously quit selling the gold. It was always sad for me to see the shift in the Swiss, because I've always admired their government and their money, their monetary system. But, you know, a few years back, they started joining the international organizations, the IMF, and participating in getting rid of the gold. And so hopefully this is, they were the last to just throw in the towel and go along with the internationalists. Let's hope they're the first ones to step up and start leading the charge away from this. So it'll be interesting to see how this referendum turns out.
Another country, though, that never leased out any gold, China, they're accumulating roughly the world's output each year. And, of course, they're now not only the largest consumer, as you know, but they're also the world's largest producer of gold. They just can't seem to get enough. Do you suspect that they're planning to unpeg the yuan from the dollar?
I believe that is the case, that they're making those plans. If they don't follow through with the precise plans of reestablishing the next currency, they will at least be stuck with all that gold, you know, and they'll have such a difficult time with that, because that's going to be they'll be a lot better off than just holding fiat money. Now, the Chinese are very definitely preparing themselves for the next monetary reform, and it won't be exactly like it was, but it could be very similar to what it was like for the United States being in the driver's seat after World War II. You know, we were spared the carnage and the damage of World War II. Many people had already parked their gold in the United States, and they owed us a lot of money, so we had a lot of gold. And so we were in the driver's seat for the IMF, and that's how we were able to establish the dollar, you know, as the currency of the world, and have the ability to create the reserve currency. Now, that sounds real good, and it was, and we benefited, and we still benefit from this, but time finally is running out on us. We were in the driver's seat, but less so every single day. And with our deficits that we have here, our weakening economy, and with the endless wars that we start, I think the people ultimately who write the rules on gold are the ones that hold it and any type of monetary reform. And I think it's interesting that over the years of my asking Federal Reserve Board chairman, you know, why do you hold the gold? And they really don't have a good reason. Well, we know why they hold the gold. Of course, the most recent time I asked that was with Bernanke. Well, I guess it's just tradition.
Because it's real money, it's sound money, and it's prescribed by our Constitution. You really were also on the forefront of folks trying to audit the Fed's reserves. For the longest time, people just didn't have any interest, but it's gaining momentum now. If there is gold at the bottom of Fort Knox, and as well as the New York Fed, and then there's West Point, those three key places, and it's close to what they have on their books, that's fine, but has it been leased out? Do we really have ownership to it?
That is a big question. So even if I had had the chance and walked through and they say, well, there it is. If you want them, count them, just look at the stacks of gold. It doesn't mean anything whatsoever. It's the shenanigans that they deal with, because it's just who owns the gold that really counts. So it's very, very healthy that the countries are starting to ask for their gold back, but it's very disappointing and eye-opening that the fact that we never give it back to them, and then they don't seem to complain. I'm just amazed that the Germans didn't get a little bit annoyed when they say, well, maybe in 7 years we'll get around to giving you some of your gold back. So, no, that is the question. Who has the gold? Has it been sold? Does somebody else own it? Has it been leased out? And just what is going on? But I don't think that's the way the Chinese are dealing with it. I think they're taking delivery. I think they own it and they hold it.
You know, I think it's well said. And if I could just speculate, as you mentioned, Germany and their surprisingly sanguine view of our decision to send them a pittance of what they have here, when, as you know, what was in the Paris vaults was returned almost immediately. But one thing that comes to mind is the Ukraine drama. I find it ironic that there was some interesting gold shenanigans that was going on there precisely around the time when Germany was demanding its gold back. Then suddenly they have a military threat in that region. Maybe they cooled their jets a little bit about getting their gold back.
Yeah, that's surely a possibility. But I think most people have bought into the official explanation. Well, the problems in Ukraine, it's the Russians. You know, they're getting ready to reestablish the Soviet system and invade all of Europe and take it over, which is complete nonsense. But the argument that I think you're leading into, that the crisis was an economic crisis dealing with money and debt, just as all the major crises ever since our crisis hit in 7 and 8, it's debt. It's too much debt and how it's taken care of. And we sort of escaped the total failure of the system because they still were willing to take our dollars, and we printed money endlessly and bailed out so many people. But that won't continue forever. But I think that's exactly what was happening in Ukraine. And they were looking for the highest bidder. You know, were the Europeans going to help them out and bail them out? And or would it be the Russians? And that's how the division came. And all of a sudden, you know, the Westerners, including us in Europe, had to overthrow the elected leader, Yanukovych. And, of course, the crisis continues. But I think most of these crises that we're going to see and are seeing are economically driven. And it has to do with living beyond our means and governments having no answer for the problems they have.
Well, I just thrown to the ring there. Talk about economically driven. We look at the energy interest. Let's call them Western energy interest. But, you know, folks on this show have pointed out it's not just Western energy interest. It's global interest now in that region. That also, I think, adds to your point that this was economic and far less political. I think we've covered the precious metals and markets pretty closely. As we wrap up that portion and get onto some of your more recent articles, I wanted to ask you if maybe this bear market is getting a bit long. We've had quite a sell-off. Goldman Sachs and a few others are calling for maybe $900 to $1,000 as a floor for the yellow metal. Do you have any just gut instincts? We're not asking you to time the market. We'd like to know what you think.
The one thing I've learned in studying Austrian economics, which I follow closely, is that we ought to have the ability to identify bubbles and distortions and malinvestment, excessive debt, and that you can anticipate problems coming from that. But the school also teaches timing is something else. There's a lot of subjectivity to it. You don't know what world events will be. And at times you think, well, this is unsustainable. Well, lo and behold, you know, the blind trust that they place in their caretakers at the Fed and in the government, you know, there's more faith than they deserve, and they hold it together. So I don't do much on timing, but, you know, over the years, especially since I've been involved in the presidential races, a lot of young people got fascinated with the Fed, and they got fascinated with gold and silver and real money and this sort of thing. And, of course, some of them, you know, early on, you know, invested in it and tried to protect themselves. But others think, I'm too high, I'm not going to do it. But anybody, I think, that has any interest in it and just wonders about it, and since I don't preach timing, I still believe that right now, systematically, people starting to buy silver and gold. They don't have to, you know, put their whole life savings into it, but on a steady basis and price average it. So I would think, and if it goes down more, I think it's really an opportunity for some people and to plan, unless you have doubt about what governments do. If you think the government's going to do much much better on the job, but if you think government's going to continue to spend and print money, then preparing oneself with a little bit of insurance against that, I think is a good idea, and they can do that without knowing exactly the day, you know, the market will turn around and you see gold going up $100 a day. So I don't think I can help anybody out on that issue.
I think it's well said. You know, I mean, the currency wars are fully underway here. We heard from the BOJ just last Friday that they are going to try to follow in Dr. Bernanke's footsteps.
Some people argue, well, you know, it saved the country and saved the world, so why shouldn't everybody do it? And then people say, well, it, you know, the dollar looks pretty good. It's gone up here in the last 6 months, so it's a wonderful thing. So these people who want sound money, they're off on a tangent. But how can you compare the value of a dollar to the value of a euro or some other currency? You know, it's what do you compare it to? But if it's truly measured in an accurate way to the cost of living in the lower 50% of our population, believe me, the income never keeps up, and prices always go up higher for that group of people, and their standard of living goes down, and they always pay a price. And that means that the dollar crisis that's going on, no matter what the statistics show or how the government and the Federal Reserve keeps preaching, you know, the grand recovery from the Great Recession, I think the large number of people, and it might even be more than 50% of the people now, it might be closer to 70% of the people who are really hurting from this financial ongoing crisis, which is a monetary crisis.
The middle class, the statistics show, the Fed's own statistics, are hit hardest in this crisis. The heart of this country is what the powers that be are after here. I wanted to ask you about Ebola. Sure seems to have some of the hallmarks of a frightening pandemic. And you say we can't trust our officials. We need to let the market do its job. Can you give us a quick synopsis?
The whole thing is from the beginning, I didn't like the idea that they knew absolutely how bad it was going to be, and therefore it was a reason to call out the governments, you know, and send in the army and solve these problems. I thought it was way overextended, and right now I think a lot of people are backing away from all the scare tactics. But why should we resort to government? What problems do they ever solve? They create problems, so I don't see, you know, sending 3,000 soldiers over into that region making much sense. And once again, there's economics involved. The few that ended up with Ebola here in this country, since we have a better medical system, they have not had, you know, a difficult time. But in a poverty-ridden country where they don't have markets and no wealth, and they run into all these kind of problems. And then there's a lot of politicizing and demagoguing that goes on. So I don't like any time I see the government trying to scare the people and trying to justify even more government and more spending, I become suspicious.
Dr. Paul, we want to thank you for being an inspiration to all of our listeners and wish you continued success, sir.
Thank you. Nice to be with you today.